Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Anna's popped into the studio. We got a lot to sift through. We got honked at yesterday. I talked about that on the show earlier. If you missed that, go back and listen to it. Anna, this is what we determined.
What?
You were there.
Yeah, I know, but
I kind of took it that they were honking at me.
I have no idea why they were honking. I don't even know if they were honking at us.
I think they were.
It was a busy parking lot. Were we walking like in the middle of the...
No, we were doing what everybody does. We were walking into the Costco.
And right.
I don't think we were moving fast enough.
Oh. Yeah, but were we, like, taking up, occupying space where they could be driving?
We were walking diagonally.
Okay.
Not, like, it would have been, it's like an NFL quarterback trying to get every yard that he can before he gets out of bounds. Kind of does that diagonal slide down the sideline.
Right, just like that.
Yep. We were doing that because we were trying to walk like directly to the door. Like the polite thing to do would have probably been to just cross straight across and then
perpendicular
go
lines.
Perpendicular lines. But we did a little diagonal.
Right.
We got honked at.
Yeah.
And then you heard that guy by the food court who said what he said?
I know. No.
He said.
See, I'm in general just oblivious.
He said, "What's with the honking?"
Oh.
Like he was on our side.
Oh,
on
good.
One.
Okay.
So I took it at them honking at me. I mad dogged him a little bit, but it's hard to do with a mask on. You know what I mean?
So you have to resort to hand gestures.
Yeah, I was flapping my arms wildly. I don't know if you did this, but I spent the rest of the time we were in Costco looking for the people. Because I eyeballed the people.
Oh my gosh. Why do you waste energy on that?
No, because they knew what I looked like, and I was at a disadvantage. Like they were like, they got a good look at me.
Okay.
All I saw was the lady in the back seat on the passenger side yelling.
Right.
Angry.
So angry.
Karen's daughter, because Karen honked. Karen's daughter.
Poor Karens of the world.
Do you think that's bad if your name is Karen?
We have friends who are Karens, and I feel awful for them. I feel like I've wanted to reach out to them in this time and be like, are you okay?
I saw a TikTok with a guy who has a funny first name. I can't remember what his first name was, like, you know, Norman or something. I don't know what it was. But he had a name that his wife used to make fun of.
Uh-huh.
And he pointed the camera at her and he said, how's that working out for you now, Karen? She was like slumped down in her chair. Let's talk about the Costco. You had some questions as we left the Costco yesterday.
The Costco?
Yeah. First of all, Adriana, Alabama Adriana, Judah, you're welcome to join this conversation if you know the answers to this question, or maybe you've wondered it as well. But we went into the Costco, and when you arrive at that door, Anna, take us through.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. Like, why in this day and age are we still having to flash our membership card to be allowed in? And there's like the rebel part of me always wants to just like scoot on by and see if anybody's gonna like chase me down and tackle me and make me show them my membership card. Because I just don't know how, like, what purpose does that serve? Because even if you went in as a non-member and you wandered around to look at, you know, their secret bulk merchandise, you can't make the purchase unless you have the card. So what is the point of that? Is it to make the customer feel good? Like, hey, I pay, you know, whatever it is, $70 a year for this membership and there's value in it. Is it like that?
There's Anna. She's a member. That's what they're saying when you walk by. I noticed yesterday you walked in because we just got honked at. I had to get a cart. So there was a little space between us.
Right.
I got the cart. You're already in.
Yeah.
I already think we don't look like we belong together. Like people have made that assumption. They look at you, they see a beautiful Asian woman, they look at me, they go, no way in hell is this guy with her.
Come on.
So they look at us, but the lady just looked at me.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, maybe she knows we're together, because I didn't have a card.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's to keep people who don't belong from walking in and taking samples.
Oh, it's the samples they're valuing.
Protecting that half of a pot sticker that they'll give you. That third of a pot sticker in that little white, crumply chocolate holder.
Right. Yeah, I just don't get it. It's just so funny. It's like Costco and then Bi-Mart, I think, still has like a membership system.
Okay, so you're confused why you have to flash the membership card.
Why? Yeah, what's the point of that?
There's Anna. She's a member. You guys have a sense on that. Alabama Adriana, Judah, what do you think the primary reason for Costco having an employee there at the front door to look for membership cards is?
Well, I am now wondering, do they actually scan your membership card when you go to check out?
Because
Yes.
I guess I just don't go to Costco that often, but I don't know how old my Costco card is, if I've ever renewed it or whatever.
Okay, so what happened with you is as you got to the register, because even if you got by the front desk, you flashed that card, that old card, you get to the register, they say, hey, your membership's expired, for $70, we can renew it or whatever they charge you.
Well, maybe I'm on like my parents' plan or something. I've never, ever run into that problem. I didn't even realize that they scanned the card at the end.
Yeah.
They do scan the card. Judah, do you have a sense of why Costco makes you flash the membership card?
I don't know. It's just for tracking purposes to me, but I also think it's a little outdated. I never understood like the receipt, you know, thing, and you know, having to highlight everything you buy and looking. I'm like, what is this? Like the Ray's fruit stand? Like, I don't know. I figured I'd be able to come and go a little bit easier. That being said, I've only bummed membership cards after from other people that I know, from my parents and now my wife. So I've never had my own. So yeah, I'm kind of talking out of the side of my mouth here.
We should have got him a Costco membership, not an air fryer.
Yeah, hey, I don't think I married. When I was there,
I married into the Costco membership.
Let me clear it up.
You married up.
Let me clear it up, because a good friend of mine, his wife is one of the managers at a Costco in California, tells me that the reason they ask you to flash it is twofold. One, in order to check out, you need the card.
Yes.
So if you don't have the card on you and you load up a whole bunch of groceries, and you get to the register and you don't have the card, you then have to go over to membership and you have to get a temporary membership card.
Wait, but isn't that your problem?
It is your problem, but apparently they get people who will leave their whole basket somewhere if they don't have their card with them, and now you got a problem. The second thing is, I think it creates value.
Right.
Like if I were Costco from a marketing standpoint, I would be like, it's like the VIP line, right?
Yeah.
Oh, stand over here, you got VIP entrance. You may have to wait the same amount of time as the other people, but you feel like you're a VIP. I think they create value by saying you need the card to even get in the building. You can't even shop here if you're not a member.
Well, so Judah brings up the other Costco mystery, which is the receipt check. It's the queue line, you know, two lines, two people on either side, now, you know, divided by plexiglass. And they look at your, you have to hold the receipt up, they scan it, they look at your cart, and then they either do a smiley face or a line or whatever with their highlighter. I don't understand that one either. What is that about?
What
are
do you
they
guys
just
think
scanning
that's about?
For like high priced items that potentially you didn't pay for and you're trying to walk out of the store with it? Is it a shoplifting deterrent?
Yeah, I think it's a deterrent.
Don't they have, like, every store has those monitors that are able to take barcodes that walk out the door without being paid for? Like, doesn't Costco have some of that, too?
I think it's another level of security where they just go, we're going to pretend to look at your basket. We might pick one item off and cross it off. But I think it's a huge deterrent. Like, I'm not a shoplifter, okay? So I can't speak, like, you know, that this is... But I would think that that would be an awful place to try to throw something in your bag. Like, how do you get it by the register? That's the other thing.
Yeah. Like, you could. I mean, it's a busy place. You could theoretically, you know, scoot your way around there. But
I think the easiest, like the most successful way you'd have of like ripping off Costco would be to just grab a flat screen TV and try to run by the old lady at the front door. Like that. I think you got a better chance of getting by her than getting past everybody who boxes up goods at the Costco looks like they're a bodybuilder. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you're dealing with a bunch of bar bouncers at the register. And remember when they used to, did you remember going when they used to have to call out the codes? They didn't have the scanners.
What codes?
Back in the day, before the UPC scanner thing became a thing.
Okay.
Am I showing my age here? They used to have item numbers on each item.
Okay.
So they would say, there would, one person's job was like the spotter. And he, the spotter would look at like your ground beef and go, 2301, and then put it in the basket.
Uh-huh.
And the cashier would go, 2301.
Oh.
So it was before they scanned.
I don't remember a time.
You're too young.
Before there were scanners.
This is one of these moments where we realize that I'm older than you.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not by much.
There you go.
I have a theory.
Go.
So when you go to Costco, everything is in bulk, so you can't put anything in your bag, like in your purse, or it's going to stick out, and obviously you're shoplifting because you have a giant thing of, like, toothpaste, like a six-pack of toothpaste in your purse.
I have 70 batteries.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't put it in your bag or on your person without being obvious about it, so you hide it somewhere in your cart.
Mm.
Maybe that's why they check.
That. I can see that.
Yeah, but like, it's not, okay, it's not a thorough enough, I really wish there would be like a Costco employee who could call in and clear this up, because it's not a thorough enough check. You know, like, if you're like me and we're shopping for our family of five, I'm coming out of there with my cart just like bursting with overconsumption.
It looks like we're never going to shop again.
Right, right. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, we're back.
That's, yeah. But that was an exercise yesterday. I think Costco should get it. I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I just, but like, if it's truly a theft prevention thing, it's not possible that in that like 10-second glance at my overflowing cart that she's going to be able to spot the item, you know, out of 45 that I have not purchased that I stuck in the cart.
I have an idea for Costco that I think would save a lot of time and potentially be a lot of fun. Yesterday, as we're checking out, we have all our stuff on the conveyor belt. Anna turns to me and she says, how much? She wants me to guess the total, like I'm on The Price is Right. So I throw out my number.
$1.
And then, which I should have done. And then you threw out your number. It was about $70 higher. And lo and behold, you were within like about $12 of the total amount.
Yeah.
I said to the cashier through the plexiglass in both of our masks, I said to him, you know what? That would be a really good idea. Hire Anna to stand here. She could just eyeball the stuff. And the consumer has the option of either taking Anna's price for the cart. You know, you look at the cart and you go, $112. Or they ring it up. But the catch is, if Anna's price is better than the price that it ends up being rung up, you pay 10% extra.
It's like Deal or No Deal?
Yes. Would you take Anna's price, $112? Or do you want to ring up all this goodness?
The funny thing is, I like going to Costco shopping with you because you'll always throw in some extra things. Like you bought a pair of shoes yesterday.
Some shoes.
And you're more of a sucker for like fancy packaging than anyone I've ever met.
Thank you.
And you're like a marketer's dream. So I feel like when I'm with you, I can kind of slide over budget. Because otherwise, I've been known, this is really kind of embarrassing, but I've been known after I've purchased the, you know, my groceries or whatever, to actually stop by the return desk and return things I have buyer's remorse buying before I even leave the store.
That's like 10 seconds. You bought it. Now you're 10 seconds down the road and you go, nah.
But I can't, I don't know what the total is going to be. So if I've rung up and then I've paid and I'm like, oh man, I'm like $40 over budget. What can I shed here to get back within my budget?
That's responsible.
I will actually return stuff that I'm like, I don't really need that extra bag of rice right now. We can skate by for another week or two.
That is epic. Were you tempted at all yesterday to put anything back?
No, because I was with you, so I feel like I'm a little more
It's a free pass.
It's a free pass.
It's a free pass. I got a confession for you, because Anna and I had this thing. And Judah, I don't know if you're going to have this in your young marriage, but Anna and I figured out pretty quickly that what we needed, because we share a checking account, is we needed a threshold number. And what that meant was, if a purchase came above a certain number, we had to talk to each
other.
It
required a phone call.
It required a phone call,
yes,
or a text.
It required a phone call. I got this idea from meteorologist Rhonda Shelby and her husband. They told us about this like a long time ago.
Okay. I saw someone else do something different where they, at every beginning of every month, they buy like a gift card at the local store, whether it's Costco,
yeah,
or whether it's Safeway. And that's all the money they have to spend.
Yes.
For that month. It's on a gift card.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Can't go over that.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Yeah, because once it's gone, it's gone.
It's gone, and you have embarrassment at the cash register.
Yeah.
At that point, where you're like, oh, I can't afford the, I got to put back the Tabasco.
Yeah.
I don't need four of those.
Yeah.
So this is what I learned. Our threshold to start, I think, was like $250 or something like that.
No, it was $200.
$200.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I still think is.
I was going to say $300.
Clearly snuck some purchases. Right.
So, yeah. So I noticed like Anna would call me and be like, "Hey, I've got this vacuum cleaner I really like. It's $212," and I'm like, "Go ahead. Yeah, I'm on board with that." But you know what I was doing, Judah and Adriana? I would be at Home Depot and I'm loading stuff up. Cashier's ringing it up, and I'm kind of mentally doing the math, and I go, oh, this is going to go over the threshold. And I tell the cashier, hey, stop the transaction. Let's run that at like 175, and then I'll run the rest on another. I was splitting my charges.
Oh.
Game the system.
You did.
Technically, I didn't violate the system.
Technically.
But
squirrely.
You know, didn't want to make the call. It's embarrassing. I'd be at the Home Depot and be like, hey, can I buy this 2x4?
I think it's a good policy, though. I think it's a good policy.
Leave it here. You got the BFT. We're going to talk some sports. Jaden Grant, earlier on the show, said he's not totally comfortable playing college football. We'll kick it around with you next. Jaden Grant came on the program earlier, and he said he's not totally comfortable playing college football this season. Says football is not an essential activity. Nobody's life gets saved. It's being met with a lot of opposition on social media. Anna, let me kick this around with you a little bit. What do we do with the college football players who say, hey, I don't want to be part of a football season during a pandemic? The NCAA says that the individual universities can grant them a year of extra eligibility, but they're not required to. So some players are feeling pressured to play, saying, you know, hey, why are we doing this? What would you do if you were a college athlete amid a pandemic?
I can certainly understand the reluctance to play if I wasn't assured that there were safeguards in place. I think it depends highly on the sport. Right?
Right.
I mean, you
sure.
know, certain sports are more impacted than others in terms of your proximity in which you play to other people and breathe on one another and whatnot. Boy, that is a tough one. That is a tough one. I think the overriding theme with all of this right now has to be grace. It has to be understanding toward people's sensitivities and their concerns and their fears. So I think the reasonable thing would be to grant eligibility for another year and see where we're at.
Yeah, I think, too, it's a lot of us are willing to gamble with other people's well-being,
mm-hmm.
right? I had a lot of people on the outside saying, oh, they need to play. They should play. Like,
okay.
Yeah, it's easy for us to say.
Till it's your kid.
Yeah, or
maybe,
you.
Maybe, or
yeah,
you.
That's right.
You know? It's kind of the same theme where it's like, you're looking at businesses. Like, I called our gym today and got him on the phone.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, man, like, we're just not comfortable coming back to the gym yet. We've been members for, like, I've literally been a member of, you know, this gym for 20 plus years.
Yeah, me too.
And I really want to stay on as a member, but I'm just not comfortable yet coming back and, you know, sharing space with other people and doing that. So what you gonna do?
What'd they say?
And initially they said, oh, you can freeze it for like three to 5 months. No problem. You can freeze your membership.
They charge for that?
No. But then the person I eventually got on the line said, well, we can freeze it on a month to month basis because things are changing so rapidly. So he was like, literally, okay, we'll freeze you for a month. We won't charge you membership dues anymore right now. You got to mark your calendar to call us back in a month if you want to continue freezing. Otherwise, we will continue to auto-renew.
Then they go bankrupt.
I don't know. Did they?
I thought so.
Well, they closed some locations.
Closed some locations. But, yeah. I get why they're doing what they do, but yeah, it's... I don't know if we're going to go back for a long while. Maybe just cancel the damn thing. Probably get a better deal.
No, we couldn't get a better deal. We're like grandfathered in at this ridiculous rate that
I was under $20.
Yeah.
Cancel the damn thing.
No, I don't want to give that up.
I don't want to pay that. What do you got going on? What's going on in that story that you're looking at your friend sent to you?
Oh, you know, she posted about this and I'm just, it brought me to tears reading it. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but it's written by a reporter whose mother cleaned houses growing up, and how when this reporter went on to work for a major publication, her mother would, you know, take a copy of that newspaper with one of her first front page stories and show it to the clients, you know, and say, "That's my daughter," and point to her name.
She's made it.
And the article is all about parents, often immigrant parents, but not always, who, you know, were the nannies, the landscapers, the house cleaners, the laundromat workers, you know, insert difficult blue collar job, and the sacrifices that have been made by parents to propel their children toward their dreams. And it just hit me because I was like, yeah.
You remember that, though,
because
you were an immigrant. You are an immigrant. And your parents came to this country with the American dream in their eyes. And they bought a motel, 28-unit motel on Sandy Boulevard. And you grew up cleaning those rooms and checking customers in.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not really just an immigrant story. I mean, that's, you know, there's obviously generations of, like, working class parents that grew up
here.
But
the vast majority of Americans are immigrants. Like somewhere in their
lineage.
There's somebody came here, unless you are Native American, somebody came here.
Yeah.
And my grandparents talk about their parents deciding to move from Italy to Pennsylvania and work in the steel mill, and it was a sacrifice. But that you're talking about is like the service industry and blue collar, the people who took care of kids and cleaning and yards and the jobs that a lot of people didn't want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I related to the article, talked about a TV news anchor reporter in Florida whose mom grew up doing a million different kinds of working class jobs, and you know, how proud she was that her daughter went on and went to college. And it just made me wonder out there, like, people who are listening, what did your parents do? Like, what were the sacrifices they made? What types of jobs did they work to create the life that you have now?
503-417-7575. I'd love to hear that. Let's speak specifically about you, because it had to be an incredible source of pride for your mother and father, who came to this country, immigrated, brought you here, and thought we could have a better life here, to look up one day and see you on the news, you know, as the anchor. That had to be a big deal. Like, your mom must have told everybody.
She did.
That's my daughter.
Everywhere she went. The grocery store, like, every person she ever interacted in her daily life knew who her daughter was and what she did for a living. In fact, my mom, being my mom, would try to trade on it sometimes. Like, I remember we went to go buy some kind of appliance at, like, Standard TV, an appliance, and she was, like, name dropping and trying to, like, get a discount.
Don't you know who my daughter is?
Essentially,
it's on the news.
Can't I get, like, the Anna song discount? It was back then.
Well, you go to Pig and Pancake over there at Cannon Beach, your 8x10 photo is on the wall autographed. I mean, like, you know, it's like, I could see a parent who came and sacrificed, like, your mom sacrificed, your dad sacrificed to come here.
Yeah,
that's what they were thinking. That was mission accomplished for them, to see their kid grow up and be successful.
Yeah, I mean, it's what every parent hopes and dreams, like, for their kid. But I'm just so grateful. Like, people, and people will never know. People will never know the 24-hour business that, like, the motel is, and the dangers that we encountered, frankly, dealing with felons on a daily basis. And, you know, just the way people would trash the rooms and what we would be left to clean up when they left, you know.
To this day in our household, I try to have you avoid ever cleaning a toilet. Do you know that? Are you aware of that? When I will, like, if a toilet needs to be cleaned,
yeah,
or it plunged,
yeah,
I don't like you doing it because I knew you grew up doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you had to do that for strangers.
Well,
and I'm like,
that.
I don't want you to ever have to do that. Paul's in Hillsborough. He's called in. Paul, what's up, man?
Well, I have a couple of questions. My first one is John, next time that you get sent away to an athletic event, I think it'd be fun to have Anna and Alabama Adriana to host the show while you're gone. I think
there you go.
A whole new perspective there, I think.
Well, I might lose my job. I'd come back. I'd be like, you know what? You can answer the phones.
Yeah. You can do the newbies place. That would be fun. And the second one is, I guess, from Anna, did your parents, when they immigrated, have overt racism pointed toward them all the time? If you guys had some battle, and how did that affect your parents and their views moving to the U.S.? And what about yourself?
Yeah, let's go to that. Did your parents deal with racism?
You know, yeah, I'm sure they did. My mom's talked about it. I think probably the biggest, and I don't know if this is racism per se, but it was just sort of like, look, they were fortunate. They had some seed money from my paternal grandfather who owned department stores in Taiwan and was sending his kids to America because, frankly, he was afraid that China was going to take over Taiwan and nationalize all the businesses and take all the businesses out. And so he was sending kids to America with money to buy businesses. And so we were fortunate to have that. Unfortunately, they didn't know the lay of the land. So they got tricked into buying a motel in a bad part of town that was in 1979 in the midst of a recession, and like we barely made it. There were several years there where we barely made it. Like my parents would send me to friends' houses because our friends had heat because we couldn't afford to buy heating oil for ourselves, like to heat our home. And so they fell victim to that, which I think a lot of immigrant families do, where it's like, hey, come on in, you know. Let's have you buy this business. This will be a really good deal for you. And to this day, it's like, I don't know how that commercial realtor and his family, who I have pictures of because they kind of took us under their wing and had us over for dinner at their homes, like they laid the hook pretty deep. And I don't know how they live with themselves. I mean, I get it. People, in the end, they want to feed their families and it's business. It's just money, right? But that changed the course of our lives for like the next 17 years. Insane. Crazy.
That, while it might not be racism, is, you know, certainly they took advantage of immigrants who came here and didn't know any different. And that affected your life.
Sure. And, I'm not one of those people that's going to sit here and, like, regret and, you know, oh, we shouldn't have left Taiwan. Like, this is, like, I am the person that I am today because of the experiences we had. It actually perfectly prepared me for a life as a news reporter, you know, dealing with all of that. But if you go back to the heart of it and the deception, yeah, I mean, that's pretty gross.
Took advantage. And I love the story of how you guys got out of the motel business, but I'm going to have you tell it on the other side of the break. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. All right, it's story time on the show. Anna's in here with me. We talked about the motel. If you missed any of this, grab the podcast. But it had to be incredibly anxious for you as you are matriculating through junior high and into high school, and now you're faced with potentially going away to college. And your mom, by that point, is running the motel by herself because your dad went back to Taiwan to take care of some business stuff. And so mom's over here by herself running the motel. You're living with mom, single mom running the motel. Were you concerned about mom? You were about to leave her in the rearview mirror. and you had, you know, scholarship to Pepperdine, scholarship to Stanford, you're about to go do things that you're supposed to do as a young person.
Yeah. I have to admit, this is part of me that's like uncomfortable being the focus of the show. But maybe if I tell the story, you know, it hits home for someone else. I don't know. But yeah, you know, we were getting ready for me to go off to college, and I had gotten into, you know, Gonzaga, Stanford, USC, Pepperdine. I'd worked my tail off to try and get scholarships to all these places. And I was really stressed out because we had approached people saying, hey, do you think we could put this motel on the market and sell it? And every realtor we spoke to was like, oh, yeah, no way. There's nobody that's going to buy that motel. Anyone with a reasonable mind is not going to buy that motel in that part of town. So we were getting pretty discouraged. And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do because I couldn't just leave my mom to run that place on her own.
Was there a chance you would not take the scholarship, that you'd stay closer to home?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That, you know,
so everything you'd worked for.
Yes.
You're about to go, hey, I have to choose between that and my mom.
It was all on the line. And so we prayed. I mean, you know, we're faithful people, and we prayed. And it was crazy. The summer before my senior year, these folks walked in and literally said, would you ever be interested in selling your motel? And it was a family that was interested in running motels throughout the city. And they bought the motel at a decent price. And my mom, for the first time in, you know, I can't even remember, was able to go to my school events, cheer me on at games, you know, be there to support me and be part of my high school experience, which was amazing. Just amazing that she finally got to do that.
What a blessing.
Yeah.
You got a chance to do that and no longer in the motel business. And I know that when we go and we stay somewhere, you're always mindful of like cleaning the room up a little bit before we leave and tipping the people who are going to be housekeeping and all that in the room. It's like you have this level of appreciation. Like it's like when anybody who's ever worked in a restaurant goes into a restaurant.
Yeah. You tip.
That same level. Tony's in Forest Grove. He's called in. Tony, you got about a minute. Go ahead.
Hey, so I came over from Mexico with my mother. I was 1 year old when she brought me over here, and I remember her whole life, her working just her tail off. You know, we grew up dirt poor, and I wasn't able to go to college because I didn't know I was illegal when I came over here, and so I was 18. I was trying to join the military, and they were like, hey, there's something wrong with, you know, with you trying to join. And then I went up to my mom and I was like, hey, so they're saying I can't join. And they're like, oh yeah, you're illegal. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm illegal? So luckily I was able to get past that, and everything's good now. And I own Airbnbs up and down, California, Washington, and Oregon, and, you know, my mother now is super proud of me, but it was a struggle. Yep. I mean, she worked a tail off my whole life.
I really appreciate you sharing that. You know, a shout out to your mom, Tony. Thanks for sharing that story. That's awesome.
Yeah, no doubt.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.